This is InvestTalk, independent thinking, shared success. Justin Klein and Steve Peasley stand ready to take your finance and investment questions and share their unbiased answers. InvestTalk is made possible by KPP Financial, a registered investment advisor firm serving clients throughout the United States. The clarity for your path forward starts now. Here is KPP Chief Executive Officer, Financial Advisor, Justin Klein.
Good afternoon, fellow investors, and welcome back to InvestTalk. This is our Thursday, April 18th, 2024 edition. I am Justin Klein, and I'm excited for this hour with you to navigate you through the maze of investing variables that we have today. So many headlines and data that is easily accessible, but which is a good thing. You know, the democratization of investing, as I think E-Trade is the one that kind of coined that term back in the 90s. And that's certainly true, but it also brings so many things to think about. And our job is to help give you the mindset, the framework to work from, so that you can make good, consistent decisions with your money with an understanding of what's happening in the broader economy. Not using the emotions, not the PTSD of the past, but really what is happening on the ground today. Is liquidity getting better? Is it getting worse? Are our economies growing? Is inflation going up or is it going down? Where are the trends within particular industries? Those big picture items are always most important because they color even the best companies. Just look what's happening right now with Apple, for example. Apple's been kind of on its back foot, one of the best companies in the entire world, but China and its slowdown has impacted them and many other names within the industry. So sometimes it's out of the control of the companies. And so that macro backdrop is very important. But then there's the micro, which is on the individual company level. And understanding whether or not it's a good business or bad business, and is it trending in a positive direction or a negative direction? And that's ultimately, in the long term, going to win out. And so while it's easy to get caught up into the minutiae of what did well over the past 2 months, 6 months, year, etc., it's really about finding quality investments, quality companies to consistently allocate money towards and avoid the pitfalls of chasing the shiny object and the sexy names that have had great near-term performance. And so we do this by bringing you actionable material and data to help you make good decisions with your money. We also answer your finance and investment questions as well, and we are ready to do that today. Now, we are going to run down the market performance as usual, as well as the show topics for this hour, but we're going to hit our first caller question now.
Just wondering if you guys use any stock screeners, and if so, what kind of filters do you guys have on there to filter out the companies that you're not interested in? Thanks. Have a good one.
Yeah, we have stock filters. I think one of the best ones that's free is FinViz that's out there. Now, it's certainly limited compared to the paid tools that you're going to get, but we use stock screeners, multiple, from Morningstar, YCharts, FactSet, among others, and they have far more data points than FinViz would. And I think it is important to pay for it. I'm sorry, most people want the free version. They go to Yahoo Finance and they just find what's free on the internet. The reality is the good data is paid for. It's research. There's a reason that us pros pay thousands and thousands. We pay thousands of dollars every single month just for the right data. And we screen for, you'd be surprised, typically not dividends. It's things like revenue growth, return on invested capital, cash flow from operations. Is it rising or is it falling? If it does have a dividend, what is the cash dividend payout ratio? Meaning, what type of cash flow is the business creating And what percentage of that cash flow is it paying out in the dividend? Typically, you might hear dividend payout ratio, but that's just based on earnings per share. But we want to know based on cash flow. Also, relative strength, both near term and full year. Shares outstanding, are they growing or are they shrinking? So these are a handful. There's many more that we include here. But I always say, you should, if you really want to be serious about this, if you really want to do what it takes to be successful, which is put in the time, develop the discipline, and learn consistently about what's going on in the broader markets and economies, you're going to need that last pillar, which is the data. And I'm sorry, but you cannot keep up with the pros without paying for some level of data. Yahoo Finance is not going to cut it. I'm sorry. Nobody who is serious about making good investment decisions is using Yahoo Finance. And FinViz is a step towards it, but it's not going to be enough. So hopefully that helped you. It's about finding the right tools that make sense for you. But yeah, focusing on finding quality businesses, profitability, cash flows is what the core of your search criteria should be. Now, we have a lot of ground to cover in the next 45 minutes. And our main focus point is about a check-in with your financial health. And there's something called inertia. So many people benefit from it, like 401ks, they just consistently save, and that's a positive thing. But there's the other side of inertia, which is never really getting down to making the right changes to build a financial picture that is healthy and sustainable long term. So we're going to look at some things you can do to make sure that you aren't just falling prey to that inertia, that financial literacy is top of mind, and your personal financial situation and financial health is taken care of consistently, and you're not just putting it off any longer. Also, we're going to touch on private equity. They're selling stakes, and guess what? They're not getting as much as they had hoped. So the whole private equity landscape, where a lot of investors have put money, especially if you're the big shop and they're selling you some private placement fund that's not liquid, those funds are needing to sell sometimes, and what they get on the open market is not as much as they're probably telling most of their investors. So we're going to look at that. Also, Chinese factory sales, factory output is growing again, but it's lumpy and there's still some issues with that. So I wanted to put the recent uptick in Chinese growth into context. And then lastly, if we have time, boomers. Boomers are retiring. Most of the boomer generation is retired now, and they have homes, typically large homes. And most retirees historically have downsized. Well, most of the boomers are not downsizing, and we're going to look at those numbers as well. We also have voice bank questions. One is in regards to global self storage, as well as 401k contributions. We also have some YouTube channel comments that we will get to. And of course, your finance and investment questions are number one. We're heading into a short break, and on the other side, we will talk about today's market activity. But like I said, your calls are number one. So leave your question right now on the InvestTalk voice bank, or talk to us live at 888-99-CHART.
When listener questions are played on the InvestTalk podcast,
how do you guys determine a value stock?
The caller voices are amplified many thousands of times.
Just wanted to get your opinion on JP Morgan and BAC.
How do you see this looking forward?
I'm 25 years old and have a question about retirement funds.
And the unbiased answers from Justin Klein.
That's why it's trading so cheap, because there's a lot of regulatory risk here.
And Steve Peasley.
I kind of like it here. If I was going to buy Tyson Foods, this is where I'd buy it.
benefit the entire InvestTalk community.
Thank you for what you guys do.
That's why 24/7, rain or shine, no matter how simple or how complex, your questions make a difference.
Symbol BKE, what's your outlook?
And InvestTalk is made better by the power of you. So don't forget to call 888-99-CHART. In today's market, more than ever, you need unbiased investing guidance because it can help you achieve financial freedom. Well, you've come to the right place, InvestTalk. And Justin Klein is here now taking your calls live. So step up with your questions, 888-99-CHART.
Now let's take a look at the market today. It was another down day, but it was modest. The S&P was down 11 points to 5,011 at the close. So down about 0.2%, called a 0.25% on the day. Nothing big. Small caps outperformed. They were down only 0.1%, but that was mainly because value outperformed. Both large, mid, and small cap were all in the green on the value side. The big drag on the markets were the large cap growth stocks, down 0.66%, so 66 basis points. That was led by Tesla, down 3.55%. There continues to be an exodus out of that stock, and it's pretty clear that the growth phase of Tesla is behind them. And as much as they want to talk about how they're an AI company or robotics company or whatever excuse they want to make, the bottom line is they are an EV company. 99% of their revenue comes from their electric vehicle business. And that continues to suffer down to about 100 and what are we at now for Tesla? $150 or $49. We're under the 150 mark. Are we at the lowest levels? Let's see. Yeah, we are at the lowest levels since January of last year. So you're at the 52-week low mark in that particular stock. You also have Las Vegas Sands down 8%. What else? Anything else big? No, that's about it. Yeah. Those were the big movers on the day. But generally, you're seeing that rollover once again of the growth side of the market. Certainly a lot of weakness there. You had names like Microsoft was down 7.50, nearly 2% today. So that definitely dragged down the major indices. Apple was down as well. So that's where you're starting to see that weakness. Gold continues to be strong. Okay, it was up again today, kind of in a consolidation phase. I think we hit 3,000 on the gold price by the end of the year. And it's pretty clear that this fiscal dominant situation we are in is starting to cause problems. And this is, we're starting to see a market that is emerging that's very similar to what we saw in 2022 from a style factor perspective. What companies are doing well, what companies aren't, right? Oil companies are doing well, hard assets are doing well, whereas the bits in the sky, the tech companies, those are starting to certainly weaken, roll over. You had ASML had earnings, and that was down pretty big yesterday, and a follow-through day today. So the chip sector is starting to unwind. There's a lot of fickle money out there in that chased the AI craze, and that's starting to come out of the market. Now let's go ahead and play a listener question now.
Love the show. Calling about Global Self-Storage Incorporated, ticker symbol SELF. It is a small storage REIT, been pretty beaten up. I'm looking to enter it at a good time and wanted to get your thoughts. Love what you guys do. Thank you.
All right, looking at SELF. This is not a small cap. This is a micro cap. This is a $46 million market cap. Not billion, $46 million. They only do about $3 million in sales each quarter. 6.9% dividend yield, but you know what's the quality of the business? Typically, self-storage is a very good business, but the return on equity here is only 6%. Return on invested capital, only 4%. I don't know why you'd want to mess with this small of a company. It's a micro cap, and you know, very little diversity here. I know you're probably trying to pick something that is maybe down, out of its luck, and you're trying to pick up a deep value here, but I don't really see the need. I'd rather have a company that is more, has more access to the capital markets. This has only 13 self-storage facilities. Yeah, it's across multiple states, but it's only 13 facilities. So yeah, I would pass on Global Self-Storage. Just way too small for me. Thanks for the call. That was Invest Talk, now with more than 58 million downloads, and I'm heading into a short break, but I welcome your calls right now at 888-99-CHART.
Every investor is working to build a secure financial future. How they get there and when they get there, that depends on many variables. The more you learn about how the market works, the better your chances. So don't forget to call InvestTalk, 888-99-CHART.
Now, my focus point today concerns the topic about your financial health and the fact that inertia is probably your worst enemy here. Inertia is the tendency to just choose to do nothing when faced with some type of a decision. And it's even more powerful when those decisions are complex, they're abstract, and they require long-term thinking where the impacts aren't felt for many, many years. And that pretty much describes everything in the finance realm. So it's difficult for people to get a full handle on their finances. And it's typically only in times of crises that they take action. And that stressful situation is what brings about that change because they don't want to be stressed to that extreme anymore. A recent study showed that 83% of investors started trying to get their personal finances in order when they felt a threat of a recession. So when they started to feel like things were getting worse economically, that's when they started to take action. But we all know that you don't want to get to that point and be forced into emotional decisions or decisions that you aren't fully prepared for. You really want to do that when times are good so that you can beef up emergency savings, pay down debt, things like that. So what are some solutions to combat this inertia? Now, number one is to make it automatic. Talked before about how the main reason people have such a large nest egg in their 401k typically is because it's automatic. Every 2 weeks or first and 15th, or whenever they get paid, money goes into that 401k. There's a set allocation and it allocates and invests and it never hits the person's bank account. And so the more you can put your financial life on automatic, the better you will be at not making a decision or making that decision, excuse me, because you won't have to do it. It's not something that takes some discipline. It's just that initial step. So trying to automate as much as you can is job number one. And then number two is actually conventional wisdom, using basic guidelines and just starting. It's kind of like, I don't know about you, when I was in college, maybe there was the paper that you had to write and not a subject that you loved. You didn't really want to do it and you kind of procrastinated a little bit. But as soon as you started, it kind of snowballed from there and you were able to get it done. At least that's how I was. And that's how most people are. It's that taking that first step. And so a lot of the reasons why people don't take steps to get their financial house in order is because they don't have a guide. They don't have a way to think about that first step. And conventional wisdom is a good first step. And then you can iterate from there and you can fit it for your personal situation. For example, emergency fund. We always say 3 to 6 months worth of expenses. If you're in retirement, this should probably go up to a year. But starting with that goal and then maybe selling assets to get into cash, to get into a high yield savings account or whatever, that can be the first step. And then from there, maybe that forces you to rebalance some portfolios. Maybe it forces you to think about, okay, how often am I going to need to replenish this savings account? And does that mean I can take a certain amount from my earnings and start to put it into investment accounts? So you start with the basics, the simple thing, like a emergency fund, and move on from there. And same thing with like a debt of any kind. There's the avalanche approach to prioritizing paying down high interest debt first, etc. And that's that kind of first step, is saying, okay, the highest interest rate on whatever debt I have, that's what I'm starting with. And then you kind of move down. And so don't be afraid to start with some conventional wisdom and then iterate going forward. Maybe that 3 to 6 months doesn't work for you. Maybe you feel more comfortable with 9 to 12 months while you're working, and that's fine. But starting somewhere is a good place to go, and so that you can put the first step in that direction. And once you do that, then that can carry you forward to making bigger and more complex financial decisions. Now, in the next Invest Talk, we'll look into the story behind this headline. Mortgage rates have surged past 7%. Why? And is there a sensible play for a wannabe home buyer? That story tomorrow. But for now, I'm Justin Klein, ready to take your calls. Hope you're ready to make them. Give us a call at 888-99-CHART.
Let's say you've been thinking about learning a new language. Okay, why? I mean, how would it come in handy? And where would you want to use it? Could it be that you have an upcoming international trip? Or maybe you want to connect with family members or friends from a different culture? I think you should know about Rosetta Stone. With millions of users, it's been the world's most trusted language learning program for 30 years. Rosetta Stone is available on your desktop or as an app with audio companion and the ability to download lessons offline. Rosetta Stone truly immerses you in the language you want to learn. It has a built-in, patented speech recognition engine called True Accent. So as you practice speaking, you'll get feedback on how well you pronounce words. With Rosetta Stone, you pick up a language naturally, first with words, then phrases, then sentences. It's an intuitive process designed for long-term retention. You really learn to speak, listen, and think in your new language. Rosetta Stone is an amazing value, so your special skill set is within easy reach. You know you want to do this, so don't put off learning that language. There's no better time than right now to get started. For a very limited time, InvestTalk listeners can get Rosetta Stone's lifetime membership for 50% off. Visit rosettastone.com/today. That's 50% off unlimited access to 25 language courses for the rest of your life. Redeem your 50% off now at rosettastone.com/today.
Everybody wants a secure financial future, but getting there takes strategy, discipline, and the right information. That means you'll have finance and investment questions. So don't forget to call InvestTalk, 888-99-CHART.
Let's go talk to Taylor here locally in Orange County. He wants to talk about EV stocks.
Hey, Justin. Thanks so much. This is Tyler. Yeah, I'm a big fan, longtime listener. Hopefully Steve's doing all right. I had a quick question about that. I recently have put down a large position in Exxon, XOM, because, yeah, I've noticed the sentiment around EV stocks, Tesla in particular, just seems to be that EV market seems to be contracting and there's less of a buzz around EVs right now. So I was thinking that it would be a good play to get into an oil and gas company, but I haven't seen much of an uptick from Exxon in particular or oil so much right now, but do you think that's a good long-term play? What do you see coming down the line here? for both EV.
Well, I think EVs, it's pretty clear. First off, the car business itself in general is a terrible business. Go look at Ford, GM, all these companies. Ford stock is the same as it was back in 2002. You know, yeah, it's paid some dividends throughout that time, et cetera. But, you know, these are just bad businesses. They're difficult businesses. It's a very competitive industry, high input costs, and very cyclical. And it's just a bad business. And despite all the growth of an EV, they're also low margin. And a lot of those are negative margin. Just look what's happening with Lucid and Rivian, et cetera. And now Tesla's falling on hard times as well. So I think the entire space is just not a good place to be allocating capital. If I'm going to invest anywhere to play the EV craze, it would be the companies that are building the inputs, the and not saying not the battery materials. I'm talking about OEM manufacturers to help with the manufacturing of these vehicles to make the electricity flow easier, etc. So thermal management, things like that. That's probably the best way to play EVs in general. Okay. Now Exxon, we like its recent acquisitions, and it has a lot of potential great plays off the coast of Guyana is one of them. And we think oil prices or oil stocks are going to continue to trend positively. And look at Exxon stock compared to, you know, the legacy automakers. And so historically, it just has done much, much better. So much better place to allocate capital, Exxon versus the EV names.
Great. Thank you.
Thanks for the call. Let's go to Luke in Wisconsin. He's looking at Autodesk.
Yeah. Hey, Justin. This is one I've been tracking for a while. And, you know, they're a leader in computer-aided design software. They got pretty dominant market share in that industry. You know, really high recurring revenue industry, great balance sheet. They're buying back shares, you know, great growth. They seem to be doing all the right things, but recently they had some accounting issues. Seems like more of a short-term headwind to me. And I'm wondering what you think for this entry price for a long-term 10-plus year hold.
Well, accounting issues always give me pause. I've just seen throughout history where there's smoke, there's fire, and I don't love that. Also, this name peaked out with all the other growth names back in late 2021 at around, what was that, $340 per share. It hit a low in the 170 range back in July of last year, and now it's starting to roll over again back down to 210. So the technicals are not good. I like the company. I like the business. It's been around a long time. Like you said, good recurring revenue here. But if you look at its valuation, $45 billion market cap, no debt, which is good. Free cash flow, about $1.25 billion. So that's about a 3% free cash flow yield. That's okay, but not amazing. But the multiple is trading at enterprise value to EBITDA is 36 times. I just think that's just too expensive, frankly. And the technicals aren't lining up either. So this has to get back down closer into the, I would say, teens in enterprise value to EBITDA. That would cut this in half. And I see no reason why it can't. Let me look at the technicals here. Yeah, let's call it 140. That's an area that might interest me. But until then, I'm not owning it. The technicals are too poor. It's still too expensive. It's a good business, but all the trends, both fundamentally and technically, are not looking so hot. So name to have on the watch list. I definitely want the accounting issues to be cleared up and to get to a more reasonable valuation. And 140 is that number from 210 today. Thanks for the call. Now let's touch a bit on China. And it's somewhat recovered from its poor economic showing in 2022 and last year, but it's been lumpy. And for the first quarter, the GDP growth was 5.3%. That's up from 5.2% in the fourth quarter of last year. So not a huge difference, but it's some progress. But mainly what they're doing is they're investing in factories. Mainly because they don't really have anywhere else to go. Their real estate market is crumbling. This is one of the big reasons why money, I think, is flowing into gold so dramatically, is that China historically, for the past 20, 30 years, Chinese citizens, in order to save, their whole mantra was put money into real estate. That's the safe way to go. And their entire economic growth has been built upon, I don't want to say house of cards, but, you know, on quicksand. Because way too many units for their population. And now prices of real estate continue to go down, and it continues to be a drag on the overall economy. And they can't pivot that way anymore. They really have to focus on their factories. And luckily for them, industrial production is picking up. However, there's some issues with that number. Because industrial production was up 6.1% year over year in the first quarter. Investment in manufacturing was up 9.9%. This is what propelled the economy to that 5.3% growth. But overall capacity utilization in China is down 0.7% to 73.6%. And inventories are up 2.4%. So what it's saying is, great, you invested in capacity. But there's not the demand to meet that capacity. And you see that because this is overall dropping the percentage of the factories that are being used. So the growth of manufacturing capacity is outpacing the demand growth. And that's why inventories are up. And real estate sales continue to slide. Property investment fell 9.5% in the first quarter. And that was a worsening from the 9% drop in the first 2 months of the year. So that's for the full quarter, it was down 9.5%. But for the first 2 months, it was down 9%. So think about the acceleration in that March month. And then retail sales. It was only at 4.7%, below the overall growth of the economy. And mainly it's because Chinese citizens are not very confident in their financial situation. They're not spending as much. Unemployment rate did tick down from 5.3 to 5.2, but it's not translating into more spending. In fact, Beijing has implemented policies, that are kind of like a cash for clunkers for cars as well as home appliances. So to spur that activity, people going out there buying cars, buying appliances, they have an incentive program for that. So we're not the only one that does these type of things. But overall, they're trying to pivot to an economy that is more internally driven, like here in the United States. The problem is, and this is what's most underrated for all the people that are fear-mongering about our economy and how everything is looking so terrible and everything's going to hell in a handbasket. We have by far the most diverse economy in the entire world, and it is not close. Think about it. We produce the most oil in the world. We have a robust industrial economy that's geographically diverse across many industries and sub-industries. We have tech. We just have leaders and great businesses in pretty much every industry. No country can say that. And China is reliant on just one particular real value add. So for the global economy, and that is manufacturing. Now, they're leaning into that, but that doesn't mean it's going to pull them out of it. And that's why when you look at Alibaba and all these Chinese stocks, and they look down on their luck and they look like great values, you have to understand what is backing them up. Not only is it an economy that is built on quicksand, but it's also backed up by a political system that historically doesn't have a lot of staying power. And so while this is generally positive for the global economy that China is making progress, at least in the near term, it does not solve their long-term structural issues. So I wanted to highlight that because it's important as China is, you know, still one of the largest economies in the world. The trajectory going forward is vital to earnings for companies that have exposure there. Now, I hope you've been telling friends about our Invest Talk audio podcast, as well as our video format, which we have translated over on our YouTube channel. We thank you for that. And we get comments every day in the comments section of the Invest Talk YouTube channel. So here's one that came in recently. Ben Severn says, is LVS a good buy right now? And this is a great stock. I didn't plan this, I swear. It was our producer that put this in. Las Vegas Sands down big today. Oh, about 10% on the day. I'm not sure what the news was, but I'm sure it has a lot to do with China. And this is a good example, right? Las Vegas Sands, their main revenue source is from Macau. Yes, they had the Venetian, the Palazzo here in Vegas, but once again, the majority of their business is coming from Macau. And if the Chinese consumer is feeling less rosy about their prospects, how much gambling are they really going to do? And there's always the risk of China shutting down Macau and imposing restrictions and hurting their business by doing things that help Beijing more than the business owners in Macau. So I don't love the debt situation. I would say it's fairly valued now after this drop, but I just don't like that background where you're so reliant on the growth and sustainability of the Chinese economy. As I said, not a great place to allocate capital. Now let's go ahead and answer another InvestTalk YouTube channel question. Jim Leahy says, I'm interested in CDW. CDW, it's in a good industry with tailwinds going forward. What do you think? All right, let's look at CDW, and that is the symbol of the stock. It's also the name of the company, CDW Corp. And what they do, they're in the information technology space, and they provide information technology hardware and software products to customers. So they're basically a vendor, and they provide solutions to small, medium, large businesses, governments, education, healthcare customers here in the U.S., the U.K., and Canada. And it offers hardware, software products for fully integrated IT solutions. And I really like this name. I really like this company. Return on equity, 64%. Now, historically, probably won't stay that high, but it's always been, at least in the mid-20s. Back in 2005, it was in the mid-20s. And it's been generally trending higher for many years, even before COVID. So I like that. I like that they have very little debt in their balance sheet. I like that their price sales ratio is 1.5, operating margins about 8%, $1.4 billion in free cash flow on a $31 billion market cap. That's about a 5% free cash flow yield. So I like this name. I think this should be on everyone's watch list. It's on our watch list. Now the question is, what is the buy point? And frankly, it would be right around 215 to 220. Now we're at 235 today. So I think we're getting there. I think it needs to probably hit its 50-week moving average, which is right around that 215 range. And that's where I would pick up CDW Corp. Thanks for the comments to both of you. Now, this is Invest Talk. I'm Justin Klein. We have one goal here each and every weekday, and that's to help you achieve your own version of financial freedom. And our work continues after this final break. So get your questions in now at 888-99-CHART.
No two portfolios are alike, and every investor has a unique set of circumstances. So don't forget to call InvestTalk, 888-99-CHART.
Let's go talk to James in Marin County, looking at CVE, which is Cenovus Energy. You own it or looking to buy it?
Oh, I own a little bit of it. I was going to add to the position, but I've just been not so sure what's going on with the whole energy industry right at the moment. But also, thank you so much for taking the call. I really do appreciate learning from everything you say on the radio, and it's very educational. I do appreciate it.
Yeah, no problem. Glad you're getting a lot out of it. And you're looking at Cenovus Energy, and this is a Canadian oil company. Mainly, it produces oil out of the oil sands assets it owns. And if you don't know this, most of the companies that are producing in Canada are producing from oil sands, which means it's a very gunky oil. It's a different refining process. They usually sell it cheaper to U.S. refineries, and they it means they earn less profits, but there's a lot of it up there. And so it does tend to have pretty dramatic swings in earnings compared to your average oil producer. But if you're bullish on oil, then I think that this is a pretty good play. Now, is it the best in Canada is probably your other question. And I would say, no, I think there are better ones within Canada that I would rather own. So think about that. I can't tell you which ones, but there are other larger Canadian oil companies. And I would look elsewhere. Not that Cenovus is bad. It's a good company, well diversified, out of Alberta, has a solid balance sheet. It's not expensive or anything like that. Has good profitability. I just think you can do a bit better by finding a different Canadian oil name.
Okay, thank you very much.
Yeah, no problem. Thanks for the call. Now, lastly, let's touch on private equity. Private equity has been very popular over the past decade plus since the financial crisis, and mainly taking advantage of very low interest rates, very low cost of capital. But now with interest rates on the rise, institutions that are trying to unload some of the assets, some of the companies that they bought with this leverage, they're having trouble selling it. And big investors sold 99% of their private equity holdings at or below their net asset value on the secondary market last year. This is according to Jefferies. So when you look at a private equity investment and it says it's worth X, that's the NAV, right? The net asset value. Basically, you cannot trust that because the assets that have been sold last year were almost all below that number. And it's a good example of why these private investments, whether it's a private REIT or a private debt instrument or private equity instrument, all of this is, you know, the truthfulness of the values are up to interpretation. Because remember, these things are not trading every day. They're not marked to market. And typically, these private equity funds will cash out by going public, buying smaller companies, maybe streamlining them, usually loading them up with debt, but repackaging that company or maybe a multitude of companies into a public listing or selling to a public company. And frankly, that works out when the IPO market is open, but it hasn't really been lately. Now, the biggest negative impact for this has been on pension funds. Because pension funds are obligated to pay out to their beneficiaries, and a lot of them have been loading up on private equity to chase yield, because that's what it's all about, for the promise of higher yields. But in reality, there's not really higher yields, and there's a risk of illiquidity. And it was always deemed not an issue, but at some point, most people or most entities need that liquidity. So many of them were finding out that private equity is not a magic bullet and liquidity does matter. And public pension funds in North America allocated on average 11% of their assets to private equity last year. That's up from 8% just 3 years ago. So they continue to add, even though it's becoming a problem for them and they're not getting what those statements are actually saying. I'm Justin Klein. This completes another Invest Talk program. We thank you for listening. We encourage you to tell your friends and family about our free podcast downloads, which you can find anytime at iTunes, Spotify, or Google Play. And be sure to rate and review on iTunes as well. And remember to tell your friends about the Invest Talk podcast, now available in video form over on our YouTube channel. Just search for Invest Talk with two T's. Independent thinking, shared success. This is Invest Talk. Good night.
InvestTalk is a trademark of KPP Financial. Because of the nature of the interactive dialogue inherent in the format of this program, it's important for the listener to understand that not all comments made will apply to them. Specifically, nothing said shall be taken to be investment advice, or shall statements on this program be considered an offer to buy or sell security. Because such advice is rendered solely on an individual basis and at times will require that the investor review a prospectus before investing. InvestTalk is a copyrighted program of Klein, Pavlis, and Peasley Financial, a registered investment advisor firm, which retains all rights. For more information regarding KPP's investment advisors, call 1-800-557-5461. Steve Peasley is president, and Justin Klein is chief executive officer of Klein, Pavlis, and Peasley Financial. Thank you for listening, and your comments and questions are welcome on our 24-hour listener line at 888-99-CHART.